Hello,
don't
and welcome.
Shout,
I'm shouting
boys.
Already. Hello, and welcome to the Unmissables podcast number 47. Maybe is
Hang
that
on.
Right? I've put
47.
That on the top of. I've put that at the top of the menu.
I feel like your shouting is a precursor because we're going to argue loads in this episode because we got along so well last week. Can't continue.
You're listening to the voice of Steph Seelan.
Hello.
Top level operative at Heat Magazine. I'm Boyd Hilton. I'm the entertainment director, and we're joined for the second week running by our guru. Teacher, editor, producer,
best friend,
legend, Jonathan Harris.
Hello, teacher.
Or Jean-Claude, as some people call him.
Yeah.
JCH, Jean-Claude Harris. And this week, in the main body of the reviews meet, we are looking at Jessica Jones Season 2 on the Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
One of their, I'm going to say, myriad.
Oh,
a myriad of
really
Marvel-based superhero television series that I have on Netflix. We're also looking at Action Team, which is a new, what can only be described as a spoof action spy thriller from Big Tom Davis of Murder in Successful fame. And it also stars the great Vicky McClure, winner, let's not forget.
Lest we forget.
Of the Unmissables Award 2017 for Best Actress of the Year.
Well done again.
She was a delight. And finally, in a slight, what one might call format change, we're going to be looking at the Oscars, which are on, this Sunday, live on Sky Cinema.
Yeah.
From midnight, including me. I'm going to be on talking
about
them.
You're going to be on,
I'm going to be a pundit,
right,
as
okay.
I have done for the last
So where
many
can we
years.
Catch you? Sky One.
Sky Cinema.
Sky Cinema. At what time?
Well, from about midnight. Midnight to 1:30 red carpet.
Yep.
And then 1:30 the actual show.
What do you talk about from... I mean, obviously I usually watch you, but I can't remember. You don't talk about the dresses, you just talk about the build-up.
We all chip in. Yeah, and Alex Zane will host the Sky
Again.
Coverage
okay.
from a glamour studio in Austerlitz.
Right.
And I'll be there. So what we're going to do is we, on this podcast, is what I meant to say, are going to be doing our own Oscars preview, John.
So we did promise you an Oscars episode, and this is basically it.
Yeah. So our special Oscars episode is being incorporated into the bigger body of the Unmissables podcast.
It's being swallowed up.
But we're going to issue our major predictions and talk about the whole thing. Before all that, though, what on earth have we all been watching, listening to? What glamorous events have we been going to? That's going
to
be my contribution.
That means you've
Whose names
event?
Can we drop?
It's only you who drops the names.
Well,
John and I are just here going back and forth from Morrison's every day.
John can drop names.
Yeah.
Getting £3 meal deal.
See?
Steph's got so many notes, she's had to staple them together, which is quite...
It's a little booklet.
Actually, hold on a minute. This is me being an eco-warrior, because what I do is I... lots of bits of paper. Oh, this is actually a bad example. When people usually print things out, I use the other side as my notebook. Anyway.
Kind of eco-warrior, but you're still printing things out.
No, when other people print things out,
I
go and gather them up.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so you are recycling.
What I usually do with the notes that you do, like this... This will be next week's notepad, this. These notes,
Cunning.
Anyway, would you like to know what I've been watching?
Yes.
Okay, can I just talk about one thing that I watched on live TV this week, which was so amazing, which isn't last week for you now, but it was so incredible. I really need to talk about. Have you been watching the new series of 24 Hours in Police Custody?
Yes. Well, I reviewed it on BBC Radio 5 Live, yes. I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Right. If you don't watch 24 Hours in Police Custody, clear your schedules on Mondays at 9 p.m. Channel 4. Not only is this based in my hometown of Luton, Bedfordshire.
Oh, yeah. Hotbed of crime.
Well, it is a hotbed of crime. So when I watch it, I'm like, oh, such and such lives down there. Oh, I know that person.
I know that crime.
So it's fun for me.
Yeah.
But this new series opened with an absolutely stonking episode. So, John... Imagine this, okay?
I'm imagining.
Right. A man is being blackmailed, okay? He goes to the police, he's being blackmailed. He slept with a prostitute, okay? And now he's being blackmailed. And someone say, I'm going to tell your wife, if you don't give me £1,000, I'm going to leave, you need to leave the money by a fence in a field near Stretley, which is near where my mum lives. I pass this fence all the time, okay? The police say, right.
You're not involved in this story.
Yeah.
Just
Only
to make it clear.
I may have
tangentially,
driven past. I may have
very
driven
tangentially.
Past.
And someone took photos of him with the...
Hold on, Boyd. You're going too fast.
Sorry.
So then the police go,
saying,
do you know what?
That was the basis of the blackmail.
Right. Yeah, sorry.
Just
that is correct.
Thank you.
Apologia.
Oh, so it's the third party. It's not the prostitute blackmail.
No,
they investigated the prostitute.
Exactly.
She was not... She was cleared. And her business partner were cleared of
it's
any
involvement. It's a mystery third party.
Right, okay. So they say, you know what, let's set up a little bit of a sting. We'll put the money there and then we'll just have a surveillance team to see who collects the money. They have this surveillance team. Nobody comes to collect this money. What is going on? Twist in the whole tale. The chief investigating officer goes into the room where the surveillance team man is and says, we're arresting you for blackmail. The guy who was doing the surveillance was the guy who was blackmailing him.
Yes.
He started,
it is mind-blowing.
He started blackmailing him before. Then he didn't know this guy was obviously going to report the blackmailing. And then he got put on the case. That's mind-blowing.
That's like a proper police drama, but in real life.
Yeah, it's honestly, like... It's like
Line of Duty.
Line of Duty, yeah. On a slightly smaller scale.
But it's even more exciting.
So I happen to be on, I'm very glad you brought this up, because I happen to be on reviewing it on Five Live, and one of the producers of the show was on talking about it.
Yeah.
And he was saying how, or directors, I think he was. And because they've been making this show for years, like 5 or 6 years or something, I think.
Hold on. I think you'll find that it's actually 3 years. Because I've watched all seasons.
Three. Yeah. Not five nor six, but three.
Okay. Yeah.
And he was saying how, you know, really, you'd have thought it'd be a really hard thing for the police to deal with, that one of their own ends up being responsible for this blackmail crime. And, you know, it's a big thing for them to deal with it. How did they allow this on television? Well, he was saying, in fact, there was no way, you know, that the producers, the big team that's been, you know, in a situation of trust with the police for this show for years, that they could ever not show it, the most incredible thing they've ever discovered. And, of course, the guy who is the criminal...
He's in prison.
He's also been featured in previous episodes. So, like, he's actually been, you know, on the show before. And they talk about how they got to know him a bit, you know,
amazing.
And what a shock it was.
Yeah. And for £1,000, why? Why even bother? So they said to him, we're going to have to go to your house. And oh my God, it was
incredible.
Brilliant television.
So are there like members of the police force who are in every single week, so you get to know them as characters?
Yeah, so you get to know them. So they usually have like, it's usually a theme, and there's sort of three people that they have every episode that they've got 24 hours to literally in police custody to charge or let go. But this was just concentrated on this one sting because obviously it was so amazing. And I really thought it was going to turn out to be the prostitute and her business partner, but it was not. Oh my God, it was just amazing.
It's
worth watching on catch up because it's so good.
Of course, totally. For All, whatever it's called. It's all four.
Can't keep up.
The constant question that people I always have about this show, 24 Hours in Police Custody, is how do they convince the criminals and to show their faces, which they do, and the people involved in this case is on camera?
I have the answer.
Go on then.
Okay, I'm telling you now, there is no greater accolade in Luton Town than being on police custody, 24 Hours in Police Custody. These people feel like they're famous. They don't care.
Well, it's a good point. It is a good point, because what I thought particularly extraordinary about this episode, apart from the whole sting thing, is that the woman, the sex worker, let's call her that, the guy who had sex with her is being blackmailed, her and her
business partner. Let's just basically.
But that you meet them completely. There's a whole interview with them, which you see immediately. No,
they're not trying to hide.
She's quite happy, yeah. So I thought that was pretty incredible. But I think that what the director said was that they earn their trust so much and they're filming so stealthily, generally, that everyone's like, oh, I don't really forget that they're on TV. But with these particular people, there's a particular camera in there, wherever they're living. So it's kind of like a...
They live in a van that's divided.
Yeah.
And he's in the front doing all the business deals and she's in the back. Yeah. Enjoying the company of others.
Exactly. And that's the situation. And it's literally on film that the two of them chatting away about this whole situation. It is incredible. It's pretty incredible. And I think
It's so worth it. It's just a great piece of television.
Yeah.
You can't quite believe. You can't believe it happened.
So anyway, very good.
Sorry. You're watching that. That was a live TV event. But yes, catch it on All Four, whatever that is now. All Four. Okay. Then BBC Three iPlayer. You know that series you turned me on to, Life and Death Row?
Yeah. No. Yes. I was Love and Hate Crime.
Love and Hate Crime, sorry, right.
Life and Death Row.
I turned myself on and I got myself onto it. Life and Death Row got a new, I think it's 7-parter, which is called Mass Execution. I know.
No, I'm not laughing. I'm loving it.
So this historic number of executions in Arkansas, they want to do 8 men in 8 days because that midazolam, you know, that nasty injection that kills you, the drug companies don't want to have anything to do with it anymore. And it's been reported that it doesn't kill in a humane way. And it's going to what the drug they've got is going to expire. So they want to kill all of these people before it expires.
As in it stops being legal to use, not like the date of
no, the date expires. It actually expires. Like when drugs, it's like don't take paracetamol after the 14th. It's that kind of thing. Yeah. So then and they're not going to get any more of it. So they won't be able to do these types of lethal injections anymore. So it's eight people and it's all these different people's stories. And one guy's like, listen, I didn't actually do it. I really didn't. Please don't. And it's all about whether they get a stay of execution or not and all these different stories. And someone who definitely did do it and he's just trying to not get killed.
So what's it called? That's not Love on it's Death called, Road.
It's Life and Death Row, Mass Execution. BBC Three iPlayer.
Because they've had a few seasons?
They've had a few series of Life and Death Row. Life and Death Row is a really good series.
Oh, okay.
It's brilliant. Anyway, catch that, especially my super pogs. My Mira, well, she'll like that. She'll want that. And actually, she tweeted me, Mira Jade, to say that I would enjoy A Very Fatal Murder. And I had actually already listened to it. And I really did enjoy it. This is the podcast that you guys told me about from The Onion, which is a mock crime podcast.
Yeah.
It's not very long, is it?
No.
So actually, I listened to it in 2 days and it is incredibly funny.
It's hilarious.
And it doesn't take the piss too much. So I was like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Well, it does, but in a funny way. So yes, recommend that. And the last thing I'm watching, which isn't about anything to do with murder, okay? Bit random, but you know I love a bit of a history.
Yeah.
Bit of a history. Right, okay. So I've been watching on Netflix, of course, The Roosevelts, An Intimate History.
Hmm.
I know.
I wasn't expecting you to say that.
I do love a bit of history.
Yeah.
7 parts by Ken Burns, who is an award-winning documentary.
Yeah.
It's so good. So he's best known for putting in like archival footage and like...
He did the Vietnam series last year, which was a gargantuan triumph.
What hasn't he done?
Yeah.
But this Roosevelt one, this is like from 2015, I think.
Oh, right.
But every episode is like 2 hours long, but it is absolutely brilliant.
So where's that on?
Netflix.
Oh, I see. Right.
On the Netflix.
Yeah, it's an old one, yeah.
It's really good, though. I mean, like, it's just a fascinating insight into American history. And because we've got such a doofus in there now, it just really, like, I thought, I'm going to have a try and learn a bit more about
there
this.
There is a doofus in there now.
There is a doofus in there now.
Definitely.
But, yeah, it's just so, it's all about Theodore Roosevelt, FDR and Eleanor Roosevelt and just their whole, like, political dynasty. And also, it's just really interesting to learn about American history. It's really fascinating and the footage is amazing. And I always think when I watch these things, how the bloody hell did they have cameras at that time? It's like the 1850s. What's going on? Anyway, that's it.
I'm not sure if there's any answer to that question.
But don't you think? They've got really good footage and you're like, God, that's great.
Are
you sure they're not historical recreations?
No, there is good footage of Roosevelt.
In the 1800s?
In 1858, there's like good photographs of
photographs?
Him. Yeah.
Oh, right, not moving pictures.
Yeah. No, but there is moving...
It's footage, you
moving
said.
Moving footage of him towards the...
You're saying moving like emotionally?
Not moving. Motion pictures weren't invented till when?
Early 1900s.
Early 1900s. So when he
you changed your tune. You had 1850 just a minute ago.
He was born in 1858, right? Okay. So then you get loads of photographs of him. But then included in this documentary, there is lots of moving footage of him.
I get you.
And now, bit of trivia for you. I didn't realise. So he started that whole term Rough Riders because he got a gang of people
rough
together.
Riders.
Literally Rough Riders. And I didn't know that and formed this little army.
It's good to know. Good Roosevelt facts.
Anyway, I've been so crime and a little bit of history and that's it.
You've run the gamut.
Yeah. I really have.
Johnny, what is left for you? I mean, we've covered
Roosevelt.
Mass execution. What are you going for? What have you been looking at, listening to?
Studying. So last week, Boyd, we avoided through just sheer forgetfulness to mention Black Panther.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think that was because I saw it. I went to the premiere.
So you've both gone to see it.
Yeah, let's see.
And what's strange is I haven't seen it. How did that happen, do you think? Was my phone not working? Did you just forget to invite me?
We went to the premiere. I didn't even make that clear. Yeah, sorry.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Anyway,
I mean, most of the reason that we didn't
on.
Talk about it last week was because we were worried that you'd...
Are you worried about this backlash?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fine. Well, you know, just go ahead and talk about it. Was it good? Did you have the best time ever?
Oh, my God, yeah.
It was actually a comical night because...
Do tell.
Well, it was just a bit... I don't want to use the word shambolic, but the premiere they had... This is
now.
First world problems, isn't it? I don't know if, what you were going
oh
to...
Oh, my God,
start.
Is this
I've already
about,
interrupted you, John. And
is
you
this about you not having... Is this like you not having water at the X-Files thing?
Yeah, I didn't have water again. I didn't have water again.
Oh,
yeah.
My God, what is...
Well, the incredible thing
you
was,
really need to learn to like carry a bottle of water with you.
I do.
You
you're right. You're not wrong.
The world is not responsible for your hydration.
Well, I admit that. I think the former I agree on, the latter, I don't know. But it was the case that we got then. It was jam-packed. You know, there was about 3,000 or 4,000 maybe seats at Hammersmith Apollo. So the premise at the Hammersmith Apollo...
I've got to say, I'm not up with the amount of seats at Hammersmith Apollo.
Well, there are a lot, a bloody lot of them. And obviously, you know, most premieres are in Leicester Square, like the Odeon
right.
Leicester Square or the
So
Empire.
Why did they have it at the Hammersmith Apollo?
So at Disney, they've had a couple of recent premieres. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was there.
Right.
And this one's there. And Disney HQ is in Hammersmith in London. This is very London-centric.
Oh, so it was easy.
This is very London-centric, but anyway.
Right.
And this is... I'm going on it's John's pick. But what I'll quickly say is it was pandemonium in there, wasn't it, John?
Pandemonium.
Yeah. And then, we got our seats. Then they closed the bar, and then I couldn't get any fucking water.
Oh, you nearly said an F word.
True facts. And there was a DJ going on for ages, and there was a whole thing. Carry on, John. Yes, what's
John,
your thing?
What was it good though? Because everybody's film, raving about it.
And that was the thing. I was thinking, do we need to talk about it? Because almost everything that's been said about it has been said.
True.
I haven't read
anything
or anything about it because I was waiting for us all to go on a trip together. But you've ruined that now. So why don't you tell me about it?
So I've seen it again since.
Okay.
Ooh, nice.
Partly because I loved it, and partly my mum's a massive nerd, so whenever I go see her, I take her to a nerdy film.
You went and took your lovely mum to see Black Panther.
Yeah, and not Steph.
Wow.
Mrs. H is a big nerd.
Yeah,
fantastic.
A Trekkie, and
I
she
love
loves
it.
The Marvel
she?
Films and stuff. Yeah,
oh,
so whenever I go home, if there's a Marvel film on, we'll go, or Star
so
Trek,
good.
We'll go
oh
to the cinema.
That is good.
Well, that's lovely.
What I was going to say is, like, a couple of things that I think all the reviews are... raving and they're all correct, but a couple of things that I noticed on the second viewing that haven't been touched. Oh no, it's not negatives.
Okay.
Is how phenomenal the score is, and at Marvel's quite had a bit of a reputation for their main weakness is their scores are really average. They're not memorable in any way, but this is fantastic score, really memorable. And the second time I was watching it, I remembered themes, and it was like they were catchy, like and it's a brilliant bits of piece of music. And secondly, the cast is phenomenal, and everyone's saying that. But there's one person who, the second time I watched it, I was so excited when we got to a certain bit because I knew that he was coming back on. And it's Winston Duke plays a character called M'Baku, and he is phenomenal.
Yeah,
he's really brilliant. I mean, they're all great, but I just remember being like, oh, this is the bit where M'Baku comes back.
I think it's got the best villain out of all of them. I think that's Michael B. Jordan.
I love Michael B. Jordan.
Is absolutely brilliant. And there's a secondary villain who, you know, as well, who's also really good.
A sub-villain.
A sub-villain, yeah, who's in kind of, in fact, you know, half the way through the film, you're like, well, they're both villains together, really.
Are they friends in it?
Yeah, they're kind of associates.
Are villains ever really friends?
Yeah.
Well,
Spoiler alert, that's
true.
But anyway, but Michael B. Jordan is phenomenal. I mean, he is much more charismatic than the main guy, than Chadwick Boseman, who's great. He plays him as a kind of, you know, he's like a... almost like a still, classy, heroic, king-like figure.
It's a much less showy role.
Yeah, it's a much less showy role. But anyway, so I think it's by far the best villain in any Marvel
film. I'm
going to
watch it this weekend as long as I can get those seats I need.
And there's something uniquely... I love the Bond aspect of it. It's very Bondian. You know, there's a whole...
Bondian.
Bondesque.
I was going to pull you up on this. On Twitter, Boyd started a campaign this week.
Yeah, I've started a campaign.
What campaign are you starting? Is it to get us 100 reviews? Because that's what we really need to be getting behind.
No.
Kay is going to go absolutely nuts when she gets back.
Ryan Coogler, the co-writer, director of this film.
Yeah.
And his excellent previous two films, Fruitvale Station and Creed.
Right.
I think he should make the next Bond film. Because this is very Bondian, down to there's specific scenes that are like James Bond scenes.
Okay.
There's like an M figure, Q figure who does all the tech stuff.
Right.
There's Felix Leiter type figure. You know, he's an American sidekick in a lot of the films in like Living That Die, who's like the Martin Freeman character. And he's just shown that he's got the wit, the smarts, and the just everything is visually incredible to do a great Bond film. And I think it would be bold to get a black American director to do a James Bond film.
At the risk of sounding like Kay and hurrying us on, I will say that I'll give you two podcasts very quickly.
Okay.
So one's called Swipe Left, Swipe Left, which is Tales of Modern Dating Gone Awry. So it's a website where people submit dates that have gone wrong or funny stories from dates. And they, the ones that are upvoted the most turn into episodes of this podcast. And it's they're about 20, 25 minutes. So there's a short listen and they're really fun. I'd imagine they're not a million miles away from the This American Life episode you were talking about.
Oh, so good. If you didn't listen to that, that was the one This American Life did about romantic comedy situations that happen in real life. and they did that on Valentine's Day.
And then the other one is called Switched On Pop, which is music professor Nate Sloan and songwriter Charlie Harding. And they study modern pop music like classical music.
Right.
With that kind of reverence and really in detail. So this week they looked at Camila Cabello's Havana, which is everywhere.
Yeah.
And I want it in Cabana, that one.
Don't sing too much. We'll have to pay, you know, PRS if you're not careful. It was such a perfect rendition. Like,
well, yeah.
People would think that we were playing the song, you know, and then we're getting.
She can sing the whole thing as long as we talk over it. It'll be fine.
Yeah,
is that true?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like a review. We're just reviewing it, saying it's quite tuneful. Yeah,
this is massively distracting.
Yeah, so they analyse that.
Yeah, and they look at the kind of songs that influenced it, and then sometimes if a pop song has something that is similar to like a piece of classical music, they'll compare and contrast them. So it's really interesting, and it kind of gives a sense of like. Yeah, like I said, reverence to pop music that maybe some people, because people are very disparaging about kind of modern pop music. So it's really interesting to have two people who really care about it and actually study it.
That sounds very good. Wow.
Switched On Pop.
You've raised the game once again.
Yeah,
but raised the bar. Are you going to bring us down?
Oh, well, then, steady. Talking of pop music, I wanted to quickly mention, I thought the Brits, Jack Whitehall did a brilliant job.
Can I just say something about the Brits this year?
Now, say whatever you like.
I think in recent years, the Brits has been a bit, boring, okay? And I have to say, I think the Brits hit exactly the right note this year with everything. Like, I just thought everything was perfect. He was the perfect host. They had the perfect people on. They got the whole Cheryl and Liam scandal, which was great for people.
It was a bit weird that they had, what's his name, and they had to cut half of it out. They wouldn't.
But that is always annoying, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kendrick Lamar. About. Yeah. And it seemed like that whole thing went a bit wrong.
I mean,
it's
literally like.
Yeah, what is the
point? You heard about.
Do you know what I don't understand? What I don't understand about that is, look, you know you're not. You know the lyrics to these songs.
Exactly.
Why don't you just get him to sing Humble? Get him to sing something presumably that everybody can listen to.
When they get these people, he goes, I want to sing this song. Yeah. And they go, all right, but we'll have to blanket for the lyrics. And he's like, all right then. And they just do. And it's
so
ridiculous.
He's just doing it for the people.
The thing about
audience.
That bit was Kendrick Lamar. It was like about, I'm sure it was about 10 to 10. It was way after the Watershed.
I mean,
on Marcella, they're showing paedophiles and disgusting acts, you know. Yeah. But it's odd. It's odd that you can't get away with doing a song lyric.
It's kind of become a Brits tradition, though, because they had
Kanye
all day and then Skepta last year.
Yeah.
I know.
And then this year.
Oh, didn't you think, though, old, what's his name, Stormzy was regretting that rain a little bit at the end?
Too much rain.
Do you think it was a little too bit
wet.
Too much?
No, I think he coped with it. It was a
lot.
I
mean, I
Because what I thought
him.
Was funny is, he was brilliant. And what I thought was funny was, he was the climactic,
can't
he won best
quickly
album.
Quickly he won that, he did that little rap. He must have done that the day and night before. He must have been doing it on the way there in the cab.
Yeah, yeah. He name checked Theresa May in the Daily Mail.
Yeah,
it was good.
And
it was brilliant.
BAFTA thingy.
But he did. There is an effect, isn't there? Because there's a thing you can do where it looks like you're being
That's
rained
what
on.
I think.
Yeah,
he
which I think Adele did. I think Adele did that. Which wasn't in that. But he actually was.
He was.
He was pissing down with rain in the O2.
It was really
on him.
Wet.
But I thought
it was fine
on him.
Once he got the top
good
off.
On him. Oh yeah.
No, listen. It was once he got the top off. It was fine. But I think. Yeah. Before he got taken the top off, he looked a little bit like...
He had to wipe the water from his eyes, but he did it.
He was amazing.
Yeah.
I was very
got totally distracted by that.
As an audio producer, I got really stressed out watching the water on the microphone.
Yeah, of course, how did they even do that?
I don't know.
Yeah. I will quickly, we don't take up too much time with my name dropping, but I just want to name drop some people because I went to the BAFTAs, the film BAFTAs.
Oh God, you've been so busy.
So many awards.
Who did you sit next to?
I sat on Taron Egerton's table, and he was absolute delight. He was like, you know, pouring the champagne, getting me a beer, and telling me all about. It. He's doing this, you know. His next
he was getting you a beer.
He got
he
me
was
a beer.
Like your bitch.
Yeah,
he was
did
just
not
going
like
to get
he got
you
the
stuff.
He got the
Taron
way.
Taron Egerton's your bitch.
Well,
unbelievable.
Steady. He was absolutely. Lovely. And I haven't seen him before, so I met him before, and he was so nice. But he was saying he was telling us about his next project, which is his Elton John film. You know, he's doing this Elton John film. He's playing the young Elton John.
Oh, he'll be brilliant.
And
he'll
be so good. And it sounds like such an exciting project because it's going to deal with Elton's kind of like hardcore years, you know, the height of his fame.
Is this Elton John approved?
Drugs, sex. Elton John approved.
And did Elton John have anything to do with casting?
Yeah, he's producing it. Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
He was involved. He approved the casting. It's going to be it's going to be brilliant. And so it's so exciting. And it's going to be a musical. It's going to incorporate the songs sung by him and others. Oh. So it's a proper musical, but it's going to be adult.
That's
it's going to be
fantastic.
Like, you know, not going to shirk from the sex and the drugs. It just sounds brilliant to me. So that was very exciting. And best of all, Daniel Kaluuya, winner of the...
Did you meet him?
Yeah, of The Rising Star. Of course, I met him 10 years ago on set of Skins. And he remembered me.
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
It was. I mean, I've kind of seen him a few couple of times since then. But he literally came up to me and he goes, Boyd, and he gave me a hug. And
did
I was like,
you got a hug from
him? Got a hug. Told him how brilliant Get Out. So told him I watch Get Out once a month, which I do, once every couple of weeks, which I do.
Did you tell him he's going to win an Oscar?
Told him it's going to win the Oscar, which I do. And he's like, you think? And we had an actual conversation about why I think it's going to win the Oscar.
Oh.
Okay, so yeah.
That's so nice.
Grotesque name drop. I think it's justified. And then the next night was the Jewish Night of Heroes.
Oh, yes, Jewish Night of Heroes. Okay, so this
which
is
was
a
great.
New ceremony.
It was very good. It was a new ceremony.
And you as a Jewish
it's like
man.
The Jewish equivalent of the Pride of Britain Awards, John.
Okay.
And celebrities giving out awards, including Tony Blair was there, gave out like the Lifetime Achievement Award to the Chief Rabbi.
But I can't remember. He isn't Jewish, though, is he?
No. No, that's not some non-Jews. Dermot was there. David Walliams hosted it hilariously. Yeah, there was non-Jews were allowed.
Was
encouraged.
Leslie Joseph there?
No, but Vanessa Feltz was.
Vanessa Feltz, the queen, some might say.
Many ways, yeah.
Of the
she was on.
Media.
She was on my table, yeah.
Oh,
she was
she?
Kuplinski, yes.
Oh, wow.
She was there. Yeah.
Okay,
it was good.
Well,
it was very good.
Lovely.
And I hosted a screening of Save Me, you know, which we reviewed last week.
Okay, boy, you're just getting boring.
I just want to say I've now seen 4 episodes of the 6. The panel was incredible. Mm. Lenny James talking about his play was so interesting. The director was brilliant. And it was just scintillating listening to them talking about it. And they're really, really proud of it. And it gets even better. It's so
really?
Good. It maintains the intrigue so cleverly. So like, there's so much stuff, the new stuff that comes out in 2, 3, and 4. So Save Me, I think, is out tonight on the Sky Atlantic.
Watch
and the whole
it,
thing, it's going to be one of the best binge watches of your lives. That's all I'm saying.
It may even win an unmissable award next year.
I think it well could. Mm. Loads of awards. Anyway, come on, let's do the meat. Let's do the meat.
Okay.
We've been rambling for hours. We've got Jessica Jones season 2 to review. John?
Oh,
yes.
My goodness.
Did you or did you not? Are you or are you not a fan of the Netflix Marvel cornucopia? You've got your Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
You've got your
Luke Cage. You've got your Iron Fist.
You've got your Iron
you've
Fist.
You've got your Daredevil.
Daredevil. Are you a fan of them in general? Do you not care? Have you not watched them before? What's your position?
I have only seen Daredevil.
Okay.
As a
massive, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe fan, I'm surprised I haven't watched more of it, to be totally honest with you, but I've only seen Daredevil.
This is season 2 of Jessica Jones. What about you? Did you watch season 1 of Jessica Jones?
I watched season 1 of Jessica Jones because I love Kristen Ritter.
Of course.
I do.
Okay. I say of course. I
fans
know
of Breaking Bad will remember her from her Breaking Bad days.
Yeah.
But I just like her. And I liked Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23 as well that she was in, which is good. But yeah, and I
good
also
Ritter
think
knowledge.
That she is perfectly cast as Jessica Jones if you know anything about Jessica Jones.
Well, tell us, who is Jessica Jones and what the F is going on in this series?
Jessica Jones. Okay, so Jessica Jones is a superhero. She's a super vigilante, but she basically, her whole family were killed in a car accident, and then she was kind of adopted by her best friend, who she went to a bit of a horrible abusive situation. Her best friend had a bit of an abusive mother. I don't want to give away a spoiler of what happens, but she's got a lot of memory loss. She's had a lot of memory loss, but as she's grown up, she started a private investigation company. And basically she goes around solving people's problems and using her superpowers. In the first, I think you should, if you haven't watched the first season of this, you need to go back and watch the first season, because otherwise so much is going to confuse you. Because the way that the first season ends, she's got a guy called Kilgrave, who's played by David Tennant, who is sort of mind controlling her in the first season.
Yes.
And you really need to know what happens between them in the first season to understand the motivation for the second season. Would you say that's fair, Boyd?
Yeah.
I think it's hard because they talk so much about it. The second season is more about her discovering what happened to her and uncovering some of her memories. But the first season is about her coming to terms with her powers. But you really do need to know what has happened between her and Kilgrave, played by David Tennant, in order to...
And he's not around, it's fair to say.
It's fair to say he's not around, but you need to know why he's not around.
Yeah, sure. And of course, Luke Cage, they got together, they got it on, didn't they?
Oh, yes. Oh, she meets Luke Cage in a bar in series one and they spend very, some time together.
Yes, some quite, I would say, rough time together.
They have some rough time together where they discover their talents are a force.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because Luke Cage has got superhuman strength and unbreakable skin.
Yeah.
So when, you know, imagine like having sex.
With Luke Cage.
You
know,
you do the math, John.
Yeah.
So you've done the math.
Have you done the math?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you haven't seen season one.
No.
So were you confused, bewildered, or did you get on with it?
Well, I think I got on with it, but only because as a fan of this kind of stuff in general, I had enough of a knowledge of the characters. Yeah. And I knew David Tennant played Kilgrave and I knew what his superpower was. And so I could add certain things up together. And there are certain, I would say, superhero tropes that, you know, run across other superheroes. So this idea of memory loss and wondering where the source of the superpower is feels very Wolverine-y.
Yeah. And she's not happy, is she? I mean, this is the thing.
She's
an alcoholic. She's got a lot of issues. She treats everyone... I mean, she's pretty mean to her own assistant, that lovely guy who's an assistant, Malcolm.
He's so gorgeous.
Yeah, she treats him like shit.
Yeah, and he's
poor
just
guy. He's just trying to help. He's helping her out.
She's constantly firing
him. The best friend slash stepsister thing, whoever she is.
Patsy. The young Patsy.
She's quite harsh to her. She's just trying to help her as well. All these people are trying to help her, and she's kind of horrible to them all. But, so the miracle... The big question, kind of quite cliche question, but I think it is important... Is she's so horrible to a lot of people. Can we like her? Can you get on with a show, 13 episodes of a show where the hero, the heroine, is kind of deliberately unlikable?
Yeah, she's a massive bitch. But, yeah, she is. But
I was trying not to use that phrase.
But you know why. But you know why she is. Yeah. So it's totally fine.
I'm down with it. No,
she's
I agree.
Really likable because she's just really cool. She's like a cool bitch, actually. That's what she's like. She's like, I don't give a damn. Like, this is the way I am. This is what I think. You don't want to get into an argument with her. Like, she gets into an argument with someone in this first episode, and she wins that argument.
Yeah, so she meets this rival. There's this rival. She's a detective. Runs her own detective agency now.
Yeah.
Right, which it gives you, which I think is a nice kind of sidebar to the whole superhero thing.
Yeah.
Gives it a certain different quality to it, to other superhero dramas one might mention on Netflix.
Yeah.
And there's a new rival private detective character who kind of is deliberately provocative with her.
Yeah.
And I quite like that stuff. Did you? I thought, like, I have an issue with the Marvel Netflix series. I think, because I've pretty much watched the beginning of all of them.
Yeah, and then not carried on.
Defenders, that was the one where they all come together.
Oh, yeah, they all come together.
Even that one, I watched the first few and I was like, I didn't feel there was any great narrative reason. It didn't draw me in enough to have to carry on watching it. And it was the same with Luke Cage. I loved the first episode. I mean, it just wasn't enough. Even Daredevil, I didn't watch all of it.
Daredevil is generally received as the best one, I think.
Well, I think this might be my favourite now, because I thought this was a really strong first episode. I thought it didn't feel at all like a superhero thing. It was like there's about a couple of moments where she uses a superpower. She smashes a chair or she kind of, metal chair.
It melts.
And she has a big fight with this dude and she wins the fight very easily. But I was happy with the milieu of New York and the detective agency and the characters. I thought it was interesting.
Right. Do you think, and I'm going to say this for all of them, because I have watched nearly all of them, do you think the thing is about these things that they're not, because I love superhero. You know I'm a big geek like that. I love these kinds of things. But I feel like I don't absolutely have to must watch them.
No.
Okay. I'll watch them.
Yeah.
And I would be very happy to watch them week by week, which is very unlike me.
Yeah.
I don't.
No, it's unlike
there's
you,
no
yeah.
urgency about no. sitting down
You're
and
Mrs.
finding.
Binge, yeah.
I am Mrs. Binge. And they, but
it's too
none
much.
None of these
on,
inspire me to. None of the series, any of the ones we mentioned, have that feeling. They're just kind of, they're great, but they're not absolute musts.
Yeah, they're not, they don't, no, I agree, yeah. And I think maybe that's, there's like kind of conflict with them being on Netflix that you've got 13 hours to get through and you feel like, oh, when would I get, if it was just week by week, maybe it wouldn't be such an issue.
It's just
kind
of fine.
But did you enjoy
it?
I don't think I did enjoy it very much, personally. I liked Kristen Ritter.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the almost, it's like almost like a modern noir in the way that she kind of voiceovers.
And it's very intentionally done like that, isn't
it? Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I enjoyed that element. And yeah, I actually also did enjoy the fact that she's a superhero feels incidental within the plot of the show. It's not a superhero show. It's a private investigation crime show that she just happens to have superpowers. Mm. I did enjoy that. I thought there were certain elements that felt, for something that I'd imagine the Marvel Netflix stuff must have a big budget.
Mm.
I didn't. Sometimes it felt
it hasn't got lots of stunts or big budget things, has it?
And it even just like even just like certain elements of lighting and stuff felt quite. And I feel a bit horrible using this as a disparaging word because I think obviously TV is so great now. TV can be so cinematic,
yeah.
But in the kind of old-fashioned, stereotypical, rude way, it felt a bit televisual at times. Does that make sense?
I totally agree with you. I don't think that you know what it is? The most stunning thing that you see visually with Jessica Jones is the opening credits, and there's got to be something wrong when that is the most stunning. That the opening credits is really interesting visually, but I completely agree with you. There's definitely not a point in this episode at all where you think, and even the bits where she's on top of a building, they don't give you the kind of soaring feeling that you can sometimes get from. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I wonder if it's all. I think they're. I can't. My guess is they're going for a kind of gritty New York. They're going for a kind of slightly grittier quality than the lavish spectacle of the Marvel Cinematic films. But I agree with you. I think it is television. I think there's a way. I almost think, like, for example, Save Me, to go on about that, is much more cinematic, which is set in the gritty council flats of London than this. And I feel like, I kind of agree. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. But I mean,
it's just fine.
That's my favourite of the Marvels because I don't really like any of the others. I can't be bothered with
As you know,
others.
I'm the only one who actually watched Iron Fist.
Yeah, exactly.
And I thought, again, that was just fine.
But my favourite, I think I love Carrie-Anne Moss's character. So Carrie-Anne Moss is in it from out of The Matrix.
Yeah.
And she's this kind of, she got in trouble in the first season because she tried to seduce this woman in her kind of underling figure. Yeah. Is that right? And I like, there were a couple of scenes of her in this, and I thought, oh, she completely, as soon as she arrived, I was like, oh, she's brilliant.
She's a
and I think you're missing David
dark
Tennant.
Force.
Yeah.
That is true. You do really miss David
so
Tennant.
Far. They need to get, I think because it's been established now that these series are like 8, 10, 13 episodes on Netflix, I think the storytelling is too drawn out for me. It's too languid. I think in this day and age, it's weird. There's a conflict between, you know, we're used to very tight, propulsive storytelling, I don't think any of these series have that. And it's almost like a deliberate decision, fine, but equally, I'm not going to obsessively carry on watching them. But I do think it's quality. I think this is a quality show.
Yeah, but that's what my point is, that there is nothing in there that makes you want to obsessively watch it, which is
but it'd be
a bit
good
of
if
a
there
problem.
Was.
It would, of course, it would. Yeah. I mean, surely that's their aim.
Yeah.
But there isn't.
No, it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
Not in none of them.
No. How many stars, John, are you going to give Jessica Jones, Marvel's Jessica Jones, season 2 on the Netflix?
3.
I'm going to give it 3 as well.
Yeah, maybe, I think I am as well.
Or maybe 3.5.
Maybe 3.5.
I mean,
do
like Kristen Ritter. She is
She's
good.
Great. They're great. She's really good. She's great. Yeah. Anyway, Marvel's Jessica Jones returns for a second season on the 8th of March, Wednesday, on the Netflix. And do you know what that day is?
What? Your birthday? No, you're in December. What is it?
International Women's Day.
Oh, now I feel like I should have given it a better score.
No.
I give
that's
international.
Not the criteria.
Hold on. I give International Women's Day 5 out of 5.
Yeah, that's
we all do.
We all do. Moving on to Action Team, which is a spoof comedy action thriller series. It's starring on the ITV2. Now, as far as I'm aware, in fact, I'm pretty sure this is ITV2's first ever spoof comedy action thriller series. Mm. It's going to start next Monday.
What have they been doing?
I know. The 5th of March at 10 o'clock with a double bill of episodes. This is the work of Big Tom Davis, who created Murder in Successful for BBC Three.
Can I just say?
You can say what you like.
I'm a little bit in love with this guy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
I really am.
Tom Davis?
Oh,
I just, I don't know what it is.
Oh, I can see it.
He's got something. He has got something.
I mean, like, he's massive.
He's huge. Right, so I met him at the BAFTAs. BAFTA Television
TV
Awards.
BAFTAs last
and
year.
He was just so smiley and so nice. And he was
really
with that lovely guy from Line of Duty, the guy who played the bad guy from Line of Duty, whose lovely name I can't remember.
Yeah.
It was really nice, the tall, thin guy. But he was with him and I was like, oh. And then after I watched this, I was like, yeah, I love him.
Yeah.
You really love him. Well, he's just like a tall version of Boyd, isn't he?
It's like a tall version of
he
me.
Is, like a real, tall...
He's like twice as big as me in every department. And yeah, he's like
he's
a huge...
He's just got that same lovable.
Oh, he's a lovely guy. I would get on very well with him, yeah.
Do you know him properly as a friend?
I do know him quite well.
Will you tell him that I love him?
I will.
Him?
Okay. So I should say, make that clear from the start, I am biased. John, do you want to explain what the F this is?
Action Team. A spoof comedy action thriller, as we've already said.
Yeah.
And it kind of follows a group, a special forces group in MI6, I believe. And so you've kind of... It's like spoofing on 80s action films. Mm-hmm. It's almost spoofing on my Action Man toy collection that I had as
it
a kid.
It is.
There's also a bit of, I would say, your Austin Powers in there, mm-hmm. particularly yeah. in the fact that Tom Davis is playing multiple characters through
yes.
the show.
Yes.
And yeah, so I think, yeah, imagine imagine John's Action Man collection.
Right, yep,
via
got that.
Austin Powers.
Yeah, one stop at Austin Powers.
On ITV.
Yeah, with a little bit of A-Team.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
bit Mission Impossible.
Bit, yeah. yeah.
Bond. There's a lot of Bond.
Yeah.
Let me just say. So for him, I've visited the set and interviewed them all the yeah. people in this program. For him, like the inspiration of it was, he's not going to be James Bond now. It's, you know, Tom Davis. He's missed out.
Don't say that. Well,
this is him talking. No, this is him talking. He feels it's fairly unlikely right now that he's going to be James Bond.
Don't give up.
That. No. But so.
Don't give up.
He's created his own James Bond spoof figure, and the kind of world of it. He wanted to create a comedy show that had the kind of production values, funnily enough, of, you know, your binge drama. So let me say, first of all, I'm incredulous because I went to see some of the filming of this, and I think it looks incredible for a comedy, an ITV2 yeah. comedy. Like, it looks better than bloody Jessica Jones
on Netflix. Really good.
So it has this very slick. It actually looks like a modern-day James Bond yeah. film or Mission Impossible film. So like when Vicky McClure's back at base running things.
And if you, Justin, can I just say, because yes. one of the only things that I was worried about with yes. this is, right, we're all so used to Vicky McClure in yeah. Line of Duty. And the only thing that slightly worried me is like, she's in this. She's playing another kind of police officer character.
Yeah.
But this is comedy.
Yeah.
And maybe this is gonna jar, but she totally pulls it off. Yeah. It is hilarious. I can't believe how funny she is. She's so funny yeah. playing kind of the straight person in this.
Yeah.
And she's just, she's brilliant. So don't worry about that if you were, like me, slightly worried about it.
Yeah, she absolutely. She said when she first read the scripts, the very first scene, you'll know, listeners, people on the ground, if this is the kind of show for you, imagine this. The very first scene of this spoof James Bond thing is the James Bond character played by Big Tom Davis. One of his fellow agents has been shot and he's lying on the floor and he's dying. Tom Davis is over him trying to kind of help him out, and his penis flops out of his trousers. It's a prosthetic penis.
Yeah.
And Vicky McClure said, when I interviewed her, she said, that first thing I had me in the search was reading the description of this agent's penis flopping out of his trousers. So if that is your idea, who wouldn't love
why
that
did
as
they
a premise?
Decide to get her? What? Why?
Because she is an iconic. Because she's a kind of.
But they got
iconic,
her for that reason because she was already.
Yeah, they just
think
she'd be brilliant. Yeah, in that kind of M
really
style
works.
Running things role. Yeah, yeah. And of course she's with Derek Riddell, who was in The Missing. Remember, he was the horrible psychopathic figure in the last series of The Missing, and he's in this as her psychic. He's a woman. I mean, he plays Anne in full in a dress and everything, and it's not mentioned at all.
No,
it doesn't need to be. Did you find it funny as well?
I think, like you said, that opening sequence is almost like a litmus test.
Yeah.
If you find that funny, you're going to be on board. If you don't, probably isn't for you.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure it's for me.
Okay.
But that being said, I thought it was one of those things that like I could tell was objectively good.
Right.
And objectively doing what it was doing well.
Yeah.
Just wasn't. That's my cup of tea. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think if you find that type of humour, like for me, and I know Kay, I feel like Kay would love this. I really lolled the whole way through this.
Are you dissing John, saying that if Kay was here now, she'd be loving
no,
it?
No, yeah. no, because I agree with...
No,
I love you both equally. I'm just saying that I know what John means. If you don't find those kinds of things funny, you're not going to find any of it funny at all. It's not because the humor the is the same, the tone is the same throughout.
Yeah.
But if you do, you will find it completely hilarious. Yeah. I found it absolutely hilarious. The reason I'm saying that I'm a little bit in love with Big Tom is because there is nothing better than a big, imposing man who's actually hilariously funny. And he is so funny throughout this. And his multiple characters that he plays,
Yeah, he plays the Russian, he's kind of Russian villain, Shevchenko.
He's like genius. Yeah. It's so alluring.
Alluring.
I do think he is alluring.
Other people in it, I want to mention Jim Howick, who played a horrible guy in Broadchurch.
He is such a chameleon, that actor.
I mean, he is Yeah. His horrible histories. He's very funny.
Everything he's so hilarious. Well. Yeah.
Laura Checkley, who plays Monica.
Oh my God.
She's hilarious. She kind of like, she likes a man.
She's brilliant.
She's hilarious. And she's like, does good fighting as well. Does good fighting. That's my exclusion of her character.
Good fighting.
And Coyote Awumi.
What else has she been in though? Because
she's in Bridget Jones's Baby. And Cradle to Grave, yeah. Hmm. Yeah. She's also a comedian. Coyote Awumi, who plays Huxley, who is the work
intern.
Experience
oh,
boy.
God,
and that's
yeah.
such a funny idea.
Yeah.
And it's he's so lovely clever. And he's very funny in it. And that's the kind of like the team. And my favourite comedies are Airplane. I love
yes,
the Naked Gun films.
Yes, it is very like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah, yeah.
I don't think TV does this kind of thing often enough. So I'm like, oh, I'm completely on board with it.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as Tom Davis described this project to me, I was like, I think we're going to do like an Airplane style spoof of James Bond films, basically. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, that sounds fantastic. Mm. And the last one I can think of was The Touch of Cloth. Did you see that? Which was there with Saran Jones was in it. And it was like a spoof of all crime dramas. And was really, really, it was brilliant. I loved it. And so I think this has got that. If you like that, I think you'll like this. It's got that just silliness. They're throwing jokes at you. Yeah. It's rude. It's gross out. It's slapstick. But the thing that makes it unique is visually it's so amazing that they've kind of brought those two things together. So I love it. I think it's
unashamedly slapstick, which I think is really refreshing,
totally.
Actually.
Yeah. 5 stars.
5 stars from me. Oh, John, I'm so upset you didn't but you didn't like it because it's not your type of humour, because you didn't like it.
Yeah, Gross Out, I think Gross Out doesn't do anything for me personally. But I did enjoy it. And there were gags, like there's a gag later in the episode that I won't spoil. But Coyote Awumi, I think I could watch that man do his taxes. He's just, he seems like someone who's just got funny bones. Yeah. Like his facial expressions are brilliant.
Great, yeah.
And Vicky McClure is a revelation at how funny she was in this.
What's your favourite comedy then?
Oh, Flight of the Conchords.
Wow,
but see that, that would make me think.
It's Flight of the Conchords, but good. Just gauging it. Have you given a star rating yet?
I've given it 5.
Oh, yeah,
give
it 5. Oh, you haven't given a star rating. No, you're building up.
3.5.
Thank you. Action
John.
Team. No,
four.
No, he was honest. He's not his kind of thing. That's fine.
No, I don't think 3.5 is. It isn't acceptable because I think.
It's got to be honest. Can't.
But he's taken off, right, 1.5 because he didn't find it funny, and I think that's too much.
But if he didn't find it funny, that's his honest reaction. You can't pretend he found it funny. I mean, I love it.
I think there's enough love in this room for it, and I have admitted, hopefully enough times that.
But just so
it's
everyone
totally
knows that it's only because it's your sense of humour that is at fault here.
I'm totally to blame.
Yeah, don't be a star rating fascist. That's all I'm saying.
An
SRF.
Okay, all right.
Action Team, ITV2, next Monday, the 5th of March, 10 p.m. It kicks off with a double bill, and everyone will find it funny, apart from John. That's unfair.
It's great as well that ITV is investing in comedy like this.
Exactly.
That's really cool.
Stop trying to make it better, okay? You've done
that's a genuinely good point. Kudos to them because,
like,
you know,
Time Wasters.
It is unexpected. Yeah, Time Wasters, exactly. Yeah, ITV2 is the place to go for comedy. I mean, forget ITV comedy, but ITV2, definitely. Finally, it's our special Oscars preview.
Ding! That's a especially big ting.
Jimmy Kimmel, for the second year in a row, is hosting at the Oscars in America at the Kodak Theatre in Los Angeles on Sunday night. The actual ceremony will kick off 1:30 a.m. our time, Steph.
Okay, 1:30 a.m. Now, where can people watch this?
Sky Cinema Oscars, which is like a special, and Now TV. If you can watch it on Now TV.
Sky Cinema Oscars. Now, obviously, you need to have watched every film before you watch the Oscars. That is the law.
It's fine. Let me say though that it's very exciting because I think two main reasons for me. So for me, the two big deals with the Oscars this year are, one, how does Jimmy Kimmel, how everyone deal with the whole Me Too, you know, post Harvey. This is the first Oscars since the Harvey Weinstein revelations. Mm-hmm. So a year ago, for the last 2 decades or whatever, whole of Hollywood's been enthralled to Harvey bloody Weinstein. Now, it's completely the opposite case. Obviously, he's persona non grata. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to be ignoring him. But so that's one interesting thing. And the BAFTAs, everyone wore black, or a lot of people wore black, and they have badges and all that. And obviously it's a thing that will be addressed. But the extent to which it is, I think, is interesting. But I'm really excited by the Best Picture, which I think is the most open Best Picture category for years.
Well, this whole, the Oscars now, if you don't listen regularly, then, I mean, shame on you. But also, as Boyd explained a couple of weeks ago, I think, I didn't realise how the Oscars kind of was scored. Okay, so can we just very quickly say it again? Because it's so fascinating.
Yeah, the best picture, there's a preferential ballot, which means instead of just, you don't just vote for your winner and that's it. You vote for, I think it's your, you know, like in order. And so it means that a film that gets lots of votes, like a film that's not particularly contentious will get lots of votes.
Yeah.
Because if everyone loves it a bit, then it'll be in everyone's top five. Whereas a film that is quite different and unusual and weird might just get a certain type of Oscar voter voting at number one if it wasn't a preferential ballot. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's not, like the way we were saying it before was basically it's the if you get a Marmite film that you think all your friends love, so everyone's loved, so it's definitely going to win the Oscar, that's not necessarily what's going to win. It's the one that everyone just thought was brilliant.
Yeah.
Across the board.
The one that has the most people liking it quite a lot.
Yeah.
That's the key.
Which just blows my mind.
But we'll get to that. We'll get to the best picture, obviously. Leave that to last. And let's talk through, I think, the main categories. I'm going to quickly mention a couple of the kind of, the outside. First of all, original score, I think, is interesting. Johnny Greenwood, unbelievably, did not win the BAFTA for Phantom Thread, which I think generally there's
that
a feeling, come
I
on,
think
bloody
is
hell.
Stupid.
Yeah, because he famously was denied it for There Will Be Blood, his previous film.
Was it on the Adam Buxton podcast?
Yes. Yes, they talked about it on the Adam Buxton podcast.
That is
podcast.
So stupid.
Yeah.
Who did
so
win the BAFTA?
Alexandra Desplat won the BAFTA for The Shape of Water.
No.
And Alexandra Desplat is a very... People love his... it's a beautiful score for that film. And he does do beautiful scores, but I feel
he's got an absolutely brilliant surname. But Desplat, Desplat. But he still should not have won
Desplat,
on that.
Desplat.
No.
I mean, I hope Greenwood wins. But do we have any feeling?
Right. I feel like Johnny Greenwood 1,000,000,000% should win the Oscar. If he doesn't win the Oscar, I did like Dunkirk, but I just think he does something so magical. The score is a character for the Phantom Thread. Would you agree with that?
Agree,
and that's why it deserves to win.
It's a huge element of the film.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, so I can't really say anything's better. However, I did actually really enjoy the Three Billboards soundtrack because it kind of gave it a Western feel, which is fun because
it kind of mirrors
with the plot.
Yeah, correct. I agree. Couldn't you mention film editing? Because Baby Driver's won a lot of the editing awards in the build.
Yeah.
It won the BAFTA. It would be amazing if Edgar Wright's Baby Driver won this award, but it is up against Dunkirk.
It's not going to win against Dunkirk.
It could do. It won a lot of the prestigious
votes. Yeah, but they've got the... I think
it will.
I don't think anyone wants to give Baby Driver anything now after Kevin Spacey. I'm sorry.
I don't think they'll hold that against it.
Did you watch Dunkirk and think, this is excellent editing?
I came out of there and I said to my husband, do you know what? I've never seen better editing. That's what I said. That's
back me up on this one, John. I think Baby Driver stands a good chance.
I think agreed.
Thanks. Cinematography is interesting because the legend that is Roger Deakins hasn't won, and he's
going to win
Blade Runner 2049.
Of course, he's going to win.
That's one of those ones where it's almost like, as well as for this, it's for all the opportunities
all the others,
you should have won in the past.
Yeah.
I can't see which of those others. So
Dunkirk is incredible. Dunkirk looks brilliant.
You know how much I hate Blade Runner, but I will give it its props. It should definitely deserves to win for cinematography.
It does. And I hope it wins for special effects, which it did at the BAFTAs as well, as far as I can remember. Then the screenplays are interesting. I think Three Billboards will definitely win original screenplay. It's up against The Big Sick, Get Out, Lady Bird and Shape of Water, but it's a pretty big, tough category because all of those films are brilliantly written.
I think The Big Sick might win because generally everybody likes that film.
Yeah, but I think it's a bit of an outsider because Get Out, Lady Bird, Shape of Water and Three Billboards are all giants.
That's the original screenplay for me is the category where there isn't a single one where you're thinking, what's that doing there?
They're all really great, solid. Yeah, yeah. The other thing is Three Billboards, as we could talk about with Best Pictures, faced a slight backlash. But I still think it might.
You are dogged in talking about the backlash of Three Billboards.
I am, but you have to recognise the backlash. There was a lash and it was back.
I think the backlash for Three Billboards will have a massive effect.
Oh, there we go, you see.
But I mean, I have to say, I haven't heard about this backlash apart from you keep banging
on.
Oh,
no, but in America, if you lived in America, you would.
I think it's an American thing.
Yeah, it's palpable.
I'm going to ask some American people because I'm not sure if I believe you.
Ask some Americans. Adapted screenplay, Call Me By Your Name on the BAFTA, and it was really nice because James Ivory is pretty 89 years old and he wrote
that. He'll win for age.
I hope so. For age?
Oh, he will. People who are near death. Will definitely win.
I don't think he's dying. Steady.
No, I don't know. Hold on.
He seemed very much alive.
He's not. I'm not saying he's ill. I'm just saying, near the ending of his life.
Oh, God.
In terms of his
latter years.
You tried to sort it out, but actually just said the same thing.
Yeah, trying to backtrack.
No, you know what I mean? Just like people who are old who aren't going to be with us for much longer.
Yep, still doing it.
No,
in terms just of give the it up. Other stuff that they do.
I'm just annoyed I mentioned his age.
He is up against the giant that is Aaron Sorkin from Molly's Game. He's up against Mudbound, which got a lot of people liking it. We reviewed on this very programme, do you remember? We all loved Mudbound.
I wasn't here for the podcast. Mudbound, but everybody else loved it.
Jesus. Logan, people very much liked. And the disastrous, but I think Call Me By Your Name is the favourite.
And if he does win, it won't be because of his age. It will be because he deserves to win.
Does anyone disagree?
No one disagrees with you.
It's nice to see Logan in there.
It's good to see Logan in there, isn't it? Yeah.
Just to see a comic book film at the Oscars.
Yeah, and it was an absolutely stunning, superior comic book film, wasn't it?
Yes.
I feel. I want to quickly mention Animation Feature just because I think it's so funny. The Boss Baby must be one of the worst films ever to be nominated
for a major Academy
Award.
What? Why has that been?
People are stupid.
But, well, no, people like Alec Baldwin. And you know I love Alec Baldwin. No, you don't like him, but I do.
No, I like Baldwin. I like Baldwin.
You don't like his podcast?
Is Ferdinand?
No, I do like his podcast. You're confusing me with someone else. You doof.
No, he doesn't like. He doesn't like the way he says something at the beginning of the show.
Oh, you don't like when he says policymakers.
Policymakers. Yeah,
not the whole show.
Okay.
I interview actors, writers, and policymakers.
He does do policymakers. He does people who do zoning in New York and stuff like that.
Is Ferdinand significantly better than The Boss Baby?
A little bit. Not much. You're right. Ferdinand's a ludicrous nominee as well. I think Coco's the firm favourite. Do you know what a sly outsider is? Loving Vincent. Yeah.
Just because it's different.
Different. Some much smaller films have won animated feature over the years. So
no, Coco's going to win.
Okay. I mean, it's the firm favourite.
Coco is amazing.
Let's attack the main categories, though. Supporting actress, Mary J. Blige for Mudbound, Alison Janney for I, Tonya, Leslie Mann for Phantom Thread, Laurie Metcalf for Lady Bird, and Octavia Spencer for The Shape of Water. Actually, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make the point that these four people have dominated the acting...
Five?
No. Sorry. I'm about to say something. These four people that I'm about to name have dominated all the build-up awards to the Oscars in award season, and they are, I will name them now.
It's not Mary J. Blige, is it?
No. It's Alison Janney for I, Tonya, supporting actress. It's Sam Rockwell, supporting actor for 3 Billboards. It is Frances McDormand, actress for 3 Billboards. And it is Gary Oldman, actor for Darkest Hour, in which he plays Churchill. Right. So my question to you two is, do you think there's any chance of an upset in any of those?
Yes.
Supporting actress.
Yeah, I think supporting actress is going to be an upset.
I haven't seen it myself, but I've heard...
Laurie Metcalf.
Laurie Metcalf might get it.
Yeah, I think
there's a lot of love for Laurie Metcalf.
There is. I think you're right. I think that's the closest. But I think she's brilliant in Lady Bird. We reviewed Lady Bird,
didn't we? She is brilliant.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say it's a pity vote, but I just think she's the kind of person that probably isn't in a lot of films that are going to be Oscar nominated.
No. I was scared you were going to say she's coming to the end of her life.
Yeah.
She's coming to the end of her life. She's not 89. But no, but do you know what I mean? Like this, and I think the Academy sometimes are very good at recognising when someone's had a long career, but then they've done something that is hugely Oscar worthy. And then I do think they are good at rewarding that person at that right time. Do you know what I mean,
though? She's not the end of her career, though.
No, but she's had a long career. She's been around for a long time. Yeah. Now, when was the last time she was nominated for an Oscar? No, obviously. Never.
Yeah, never, yeah.
So, and can you see her being in an Oscar-nominated film?
Yes. No. I mean, apart from this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So this is her chance, is all what right. I'm saying.
John, what were you going to say?
I can't remember. No. I've been lost now. No, I think that's the only one.
Yeah.
Supporting actor.
Yeah.
I actually really liked Woody Harrelson in Three Billboards
as well.
He's great, yeah. I thought he was brilliant.
I just don't think anyone can beat Sam Rockwell.
Rockwell's won everything. He's won everything. Maybe
it would be a huge upset if he didn't win.
It would.
Yeah.
And
but then what about the backlash?
I
think the backlash affects more the writer and the director and the film rather than the stars. I think everyone knows. Frances McDormand. No, Frances McDormand. No one can deny her gigantically brilliant performance in this film. So the backlash won't affect her, and she will win Best Actress. But it might affect Martin McDonagh as the writer of the film and the film itself.
That seems unfair.
So I think we're agreed that it's going to be Oldman, Darkest Hour, McDormand, 3 Billboards, Sam Rockwell, 3 Billboards. Despite the backlash, and either Laurie Metcalf or Alison Janney. My only thing about the Alison Janney is
I think Alison Janney should win it.
Steady. Yeah. Well, I think she's brilliant in I, Tonya, but it is a fairly one-note performance. She's sitting there with a fag, with a parrot on her shoulder, being horrible. And there's one key scene in the diner where she shows that she does love in her own way. She loves her daughter after all. But it's funny. It's two difficult mothers vying. They're the roles. But I think Laurie Metcalf's version of the difficult mother is a more subtle version of it.
than Alison Janney's. I love them both. So I think that Laurie Metcalf does stand a chance of winning. But
I really, really want her to win.
Okay. Finally, let's talk about Best Picture.
Okay.
And what I'm going to say about Best Picture is that for me, so there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 9 nominations. Mm-hmm. Call Me By Your Name, mm-hmm. Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, The Post, The Shape of Water, and 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. For me, there are 4 in contention, okay, which is very unusual, because usually there's like 1 or 2 in contention if you're lucky. Mm. For me, the 4 in contention are Get Out, yeah. Lady Bird, mm. The Shape of Water, and 3 Billboards.
I'm going to say, I think you've written off The Post too soon.
Oh no, I've totally written off The Post. Why? The Post has done a hope in effing
hell. Yeah, but I think lots of people just liked it. And now with the voting system, that I understand it.
Not enough just liked it enough.
Okay.
I'm afraid. I think The Post was lucky to get in, the top 9. That Steven Spielberg film was a lovely, it's just too solid a film. I don't think it's inspirational enough. Whereas I think those 4 films have got big fan bases of film critics and people, you know, and kind of actors. Think of the big majority of voters, the other thing is, are actors. Or, you know, retired actors. And I think these films have big, big performances. All of them have big performances. But anyway, I'm going to let you two decide which one.
On the night? Do we get to
decide? Yeah, you get to decide.
Oh, that means we get one of those goodie bags. That'd be great.
But what would you say, John? What's your feeling? I mean, you may disagree that it's down to those 4. You may think it's going to be something completely different.
So out of the 4 that you've selected, I haven't seen Lady Bird yet. Okay.
In cinemas?
Yeah, so I need to pull my socks up.
Yeah.
I would be happy for any of those to win. I think that would be... I mean, the great moral victory of the year would be if Get Out won.
I would not be happy if any of those won. I think that... I think The Post is a good film. I also think, why have you not said Dunkirk?
I just think Dunkirk... I feel it's just missed out on getting enough attention in this awards season.
Because when it came out, Oscars buzzed, and it seemed to fizzle.
Yeah, it's
with
fizzled
time.
A bit. It came out very early in the process. You know, it came out kind of very early summer last year. So although Get Out, funnily enough, did come out even earlier, but for some reason, I feel Get Out has picked up more of a head of steam than Dunkirk. I love Dunkirk. Dunkirk was in my top 2 films of the year for sure. But I'd be amazed. I mean, I think it's an outsider, maybe out of. Maybe it's in the... That's the next one on my list that stands some chance, but I don't think it... I think it's down to those 4.
Okay.
So what would you pick? Would you pick Dunkirk?
I probably would. I think Dunkirk's going to get something. I mean, I don't know. We haven't talked about director, and maybe Christopher Nolan will win for that. But I really, really hope Greta Gerwig wins. That's what I really want Greta Gerwig to win for Lady Bird. I think they have got to give it to Greta Gerwig.
So this is interesting. So Greta Gerwig is one of the only like 4 or 5 women in history to have been nominated as Best Director. Very good point for mentioning director. Alongside Christopher Nolan for Dunkirk, Jordan Peele for Get Out, Paul Thomas Anderson for Phantom Thread, and Guillermo del Toro. But what I would say is Guillermo has won the BAFTA, and he's won the vast majority again of the awards in the build-up to the Oscars, and I think he will win.
But I think she should win because she should win, not because of anything other than that. But it's a brilliantly directed film.
If
as
you think
well.
About how
in the subtlety of
completely.
How, and
but I want. I think it's almost. I wonder if the issue is that subtlety is whether
but this is my issue with that because actually she's done it without any tricks or anything like that, and that has got to be rewarded in some way.
I'm in full agreement
that you can have a film that people
I totally
love
agree.
Without doing any CGI-ness.
AGREE. Okay. I agree. But I'd say is think of those voters. I think they're going to be sitting there going, oh, hold on a minute. Nolan managed to recreate World War II. You know, Paul Thomas Anderson created this massive, incredibly beautiful film. But more importantly, Guillermo del Toro is considered, quite rightly, as this grand artist, this grand visionary of fairy tales. And I think he's going to get it.
Is there not a little bit of an element as well? Like, for instance, I would say with Sam Rockwell and Gary Oldman, and giving Guillermo for director, it's almost like we're slightly giving this to you because you're great.
Yes.
Full stop.
Yes.
And Greta Gerwig.
Yes.
Is at the beginning of
I
her
think
career.
So, yeah.
I'm not saying that. That
no,
I'm not
no.
Saying
I think
that,
John, I'm talking about what how talking, the votes are going to
yeah,
think.
Yeah, hypothetically in their brains. So. I'm not saying that's right or wrong.
I think Greta Gerwig deserves to win, and if she doesn't win, then I'm going to be furious.
But So I'm going to stick with Guillermo. Sorry, you're saying Greta. You're saying we take Guillermo. I think Best Picture. You see, I think Lady Bird is an outsider for all similar reasons that what you've been saying. But for me personally, I think that I hate it when people say for me personally, because obviously everything you say is personally. So apologies. Mm. But I think Ladybug feels, like, as much as I loved it, it feels slightly not quite of an incredible achievement as Get Out. And I think Get Out is going to win Best Picture.
I don't really think that's
do. And I think it'll be one of the. And I think if it does, it's going to be so exciting.
You're
going to
be
so
excited. I'm going to be so excited. For weeks.
Because.
I don't think it's going to win.
I think it should.
I'm not saying it shouldn't.
I think it will.
But. Well, let's see.
We'll see.
We're going to. We'll come back to this once Greta Gerwig's won her Oscar and talk about it.
Yeah.
Right. Well.
I think we've previewed the Oscars, haven't we?
Ding!
Yeah. Some may say. For frankly too long. I don't know. Leave that up to the people on the ground listening. Finally, what time is it?
It's question time. John.
It's question time.
John.
Yeah?
What time is it?
Question time. Question.
What is, read the Oscars, your best all time? Obviously, you have them all in your head, don't you? All the winners of Best Picture down the years, going back, you know, Gone with the Wind.
Did Whatever Happened to Baby Jane win? No.
Not Best Picture. It won. It was nominated.
She won the Oscar, though, yeah, didn't she?
But, what's your favourite Best Picture winner? Steph.
Oh, right, because I don't have the one in here, but I tell you why, I was very, very happy when Spotlight won.
Okay.
I was very, very happy because that hadn't won anything all night.
Yep.
And I now see why Spotlight won, because it was generally accepted as just a bloody, ruddy, brilliant film. And if you haven't seen it, you should see it.
I had a little Google earlier.
Good, yeah. Good to see preparation.
So the famous statement that goes around is Hitchcock never won an Oscar.
Right.
But is it actually he never won a directing Oscar?
Yes.
Because I didn't realise until today that Rebecca won Best Film. And
did
a big
it?
Fan
oh,
of Rebecca.
Well. You're a big fan of Rebecca, aren't you?
Oh, I love Rebecca. Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. I'm going to say that's a good answer. Well done.
Cheers.
Thanks. I'm going to say kind of in a similar sense to Get Out. So one of the reasons I'm very excited to
guess,
I'm a huge horror fan. And The Science of the Lambs, which
did
is
one
best picture.
Oh my God! Well,
The Science of the Lambs,
to win.
You know, the late great Jonathan Demme, and it won a lot of the big. In fact, I think it won best actor. I think it won best actress. I think it won best director. It was a massive clean sweep, and it was one of the rare times that the Academy voters realised this fucking genre film, this horror film, is also an absolute cast iron classic. And
is this
they were
what
right.
you're basing your sorry? Is that what you're saying? You're basing your Get Out thing on?
A little bit.
Okay.
I think Get Out is a future cast iron classic. And I think
Science
of the Lambs, one of the greatest horror films of all time, one of the greatest films of all time, is my favourite Oscar Best Picture winner. John, thank you very much for 2 weeks of gold.
No worries.
And 45 weeks before that of other weeks of being producing and doing everything.
Yeah.
It's a goodbye from me.
It's a goodbye from me.
And it's a goodbye from me.